Good afternoon. You're listening to KTOO in Juneau. I'm Yvonne Crumry. After months without a clear plan, Juneau's new cold weather emergency shelter opened in a warehouse south of downtown in late October. KTOO visited the shelter on Thursday to hear how it's going. Julian Picard sits down to a late-night dinner of ramen and a plastic-wrapped sandwich near his cot. The temperature outside is just below freezing as he and a few dozen people settle in for the night at the city's new warming shelter.
If it wasn't for this place, I don't know what I would do, honestly. It would be bad.
Picard has been without stable housing since 2007. For the last few years, he's relied on Juneau's winter emergency shelter. It's a city-funded space that's meant to be a last resort for unhoused people to survive the night when temperatures drop below freezing. Picard says it isn't where he wants to be, surrounded by strangers in an industrial warehouse meant for storage, not housing. But if he wants to make it through this winter, it's where he has to be.
I haven't always been in this position, you know. I used to work, have family, do all this, you know. And then, like, it's really weird, like, when you're Juneau and you get, bam, you get down to the bottom, and you just, no matter how hard you fight and claw and try to get your way back up, you can't.
For the last 2 years, the city's emergency shelter was located downtown at Resurrection Lutheran Church. When the congregation voted against hosting the shelter again this winter, St. Vincent de Paul stepped in to work with the city. Shelter manager Jackie Bryant says she knew after her first visit to the warehouse that the new shelter could provide the basics for people to get through the night.
That was my first reaction. It was warm in here. That's what they need. That's awesome.
It has heating, insulation, and electricity. But the bathrooms are porta-potties outside, and there's no running water. It's open from 9 p.m. to 7 a.m. and provides meals at night and in the morning. Bryant says that on the busiest nights, the shelter has housed nearly 50 people. More than 160 people have used the shelter since it opened. So far, the warehouse has been running better than she expected, but it's still just an emergency stopgap to Juneau's greater housing crisis.
I know a warming center, a warming shelter, is not a solution. It just keeps people alive, which is what it's designed for, to keep them alive during the winter. It does not replace housing by any means, but there's a real need for it.
Olga Askowak is one of the shelter staff. She knows that need well. She stands at a table near the shelter's entrance and helps new patrons sign in as they come in for the night.
I was homeless before, me and my kids. We lived in a smaller village and we didn't really have any help, anyone to reach out to. And then we came here to Juneau with no place to go.
Askowak says she and her daughter first went to a WARE shelter, then to St. Vincent's for help, and found stability in Juneau. Since then, Askowak has worked with people experiencing homelessness for over a decade. She says the new shelter works, but she wishes it had a kitchen.
That's the one thing I really enjoy doing is baking, being in the kitchen. And, you know, seeing everybody happy. They got something warm to take out.
Another problem is the location. St. Vincent de Paul and the city coordinate transportation from the Mendenhall Valley and downtown to the shelter, using a city bus in the morning and a 15-passenger van at night. But Bryant says she's not a fan of the shelter's distance from downtown.
I really don't care for the location. I'm going to be honest, I really don't. But it's working. We used to be in downtown in the Jack, or when it was at St. Vincent's. You're right there in CARES, is right there. The services have been close.
That includes quick access to emergency services. So far, she says that extra help has come quickly when they needed it. But for now, Bryant says the shelter's biggest needs are more blankets and socks. With help from Clarice Larson in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry. In August, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service denied a petition to list the Alexander Archipelago wolf on the endangered species list. It was the third such petition in 2 decades. As KRBD's Jack Darrell reports, part of this latest review included something new, incorporating local indigenous knowledge about the wolves.
The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service interviewed 9 Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian wolf experts in southeast Alaska to learn more about the species. Environmental groups have tried for years to get the wolves listed as endangered, most recently in the form of a petition from the Center for Biological Diversity, Alaska Rainforest Defenders, and Defenders of Wildlife. In their review, Fish and Wildlife had to consider the wolf's cultural and ecological place in its environment. For federal and state agencies, Alexander Archipelago wolf populations are notoriously tricky to estimate. Sarah Markegaard, a biologist with Fish and Wildlife, says getting knowledge from those that live close to them helped.
So we learned a lot about wolf abundance there. And we even received quantitative information that we were able to use in our population models. So that was kind of unexpected and an amazing addition to what we knew.
At a federal seminar on the wolves, Dr. Stephen Langdon, an anthropologist, called this project nothing short of revolutionary.
I'd like to thank the indigenous experts that participated for this really important and I think groundbreaking, path-cutting acquisition and utilization of indigenous knowledge going forward. You guys made it possible to make a very significant path-breaking effort in that regard.
In a later call, Langdon says this is one of the most robust uses of ecological indigenous knowledge in a federal policy decision that he's seen. And he says how it was used is especially important.
They drew on that knowledge, and the knowledge was actually quoted, which is, in other words, it wasn't paraphrased. Okay, it was actually brought in on a quote basis, which I think is an important point of emphasis.
The indigenous science within the report details overlap between southeastern wolves and their larger, shaggier cousins, Yukon timber wolves, something that came as a shock to Langdon, Markegaard, and the Western scientists. In the report, signs of Yukon timber wolves were seen in the Haines and Yakutat areas, and evidence that local wolves had bred with them were seen as far south as Metlakatla. Tim Ackerman grew up tracking timber wolves across Alaska's interior. He's a Tlingit storyteller in Haines.
Now, all these trails lead up into the interior, into the Yukon. So as animals migrate back and forth, I'm sure the Yukon wolves come down this far, you know, and intermingle with the southerly packs.
Ackerman says as a lifelong trapper, he's observed these wolves in their natural habitat for as long as he can remember.
You know, it really helps that I come from Alaska and been here all my life, and I know I see things and observe animals. You know, who's to say that he can tell me that that wasn't what I saw kind of thing?
Ackerman says wolves are crucial to the health of the deer population and always have been. This animosity towards the wolf, the constant debate about population density, they're Western problems, he says.
The perception of Western society looking at these animals as a pest, basically, you know, the scary wolf, the gonna eat all the cows, kill all the cows, kill everything kind of thing, you know, when they poison them, trap them, shoot them.
Scott and Michael Jackson are distant relatives who live in Cake. Michael Jackson is a Tlingit elder. He says humans and wolves are inextricably linked in Southeast Alaska.
Growing up around wolves, we knew them intimately, and they have a part in our lives because they kind of controlled, as we do, try to control them. They control the bounty of the deer and moose that we have.
Scott Jackson is a master wolf trapper. He says, without trapping to thin the population, wolves decimate the deer population, the same deer that his community relies on for food. For Jackson, helping state and federal managers was about striking the right balance.
So it was more about helping control the island and helping put it back in a positive manner.
Last year, the Biden administration released formal guidance on incorporating indigenous knowledge into scientific practice to inform federal research, policy, and decision-making. Across federal agencies, advocates say it's an attempt to remedy prior dismissals of this form of knowledge and strengthen the nation-to-nation relationship with tribes. Wolves are smart. Scott Jackson says if you capture them or put up a bunch of trail-marking tape in an area, they'll stop going there. He says we study the wolves to learn how to manage them in their natural habitat, but the act of studying them can affect that habitat.
We work with biologists. That's how we maintain the balance. I think leveling on both sides, what I'd like to see is people to continue to study, people to continue to trap, my friends, myself, kids. I have a hard time seeing it go on the endangered species list.
Jackson says he hopes the new guidance on acknowledging indigenous expertise will help shape future policy. He says he'd like to continue trapping and teach his sons that there needs to be balance and respect. In Ketchikan, I'm Jack Darrell.
And as for the weather here in Juneau, it's currently 37 degrees and cloudy. Tonight, there's a rain and snow mix on the forecast with a low of 32 degrees. Tomorrow, there may be some sun, and then the rain and snow mix could return with a high of 34 degrees. Later this week, expect some rain with temperatures in the high 30s. You're listening to KTOO. It's just about 5 o'clock.